Welcome, everybody, to the Eyes on Big Podcast, your go-to Big Ten football podcast, brought to you by the Amador Whiskey Company. I'm your co-host, Jeffrey the Greek, joined, as always, by...
This is Big Kurt here.
Big Kurt, are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I'm Big Kurt on Twitter at B1GKURT.
And I am Jeffrey the Greek at Jeffrey the Greek. Thank you so much for listening and downloading the podcast. Speaking of Twitter, top 10 Twitter day of all time, maybe top five. We are recording this on May 17th. We wake up to the weirdest news. Shout out to Danimal. He actually broke it to me, which was that Scottie Scheffler got arrested. One of the last professional sports athletes on the planet that you would expect to be arrested. I, of course, go to Twitter. Speaking of Twitter, find out, yes, he's been arrested. You kind of find out the details as the day goes on. I assumed it was a DUI when I first saw it. It doesn't turn out to, well, I mean, there was a horrible thing that happened, but it wasn't anything bad with Scheffler. And then that unleashed just an incredible day of memes and jokes and videos that was just incredible, Kurt.
Yeah, you know, there's so many, just too many to mention. My favorite one, though, that was subtle was at the Masters dinner, he should serve a jail yard dinner, like a, you know, cafeteria style dinner. Wouldn't that be amazing?
That was incredible. I would say all of the ones combining him in some capacity with the OJ, you know, like Scottie Scheffler. Then you see him superimposed in the white Bronco or in a white golf cart with the police behind him heading towards the golf course. It was just nonstop. I was really busy today. I couldn't like jump in as much as I want, but every time you opened up Twitter, it was like three or four meme jokes, video, you know, like video clips. It was just incredible, man. But it's days like this where you're saying, oh, that's right. That's why I don't delete this app. It's just too much fun.
Correct. I mean, of course, you had the stooges that were, as always, trying to make it political in some way or, yes, you know, taking sides, of course. And none of us were there. So we don't know exactly how it went down. And
because we have to fight. We always have to fight about something. Yeah. And then the guy goes out and shoots 600 today.
Minus five, was it?
That's what it was. Somebody had asked me, like, how do you think he'll do? I was like, well, do great, because you can't get that guy off of his perch, man. He is as focused can be. I just thought of another one. I think he just had his kid, finally, after they thought maybe he would have to leave the Masters. And somebody had a joke. Now he finally knows what it's like to have a wife and kids. You're all frazzled, late, getting to the golf course. And these are the things that happen. That's a joke as well.
Boy.
And if that wasn't good enough, the other thing that happened that was just absolutely incredible for one of the people recording a podcast right now, which was the official EA Sports trailer came out today, set to Welcome to the Jungle. Absolutely fantastic. Kurt, I know the video game in general, let alone just EA Sports, missed you. Was there just a little tiny part of your cold dead heart? Did you watch the trailer at all? I would ask you that.
Yeah, the only thing that interested me in the least is that Illinois made the trailer for about a tenth of a second, maybe less than a tenth of a second. And it was only to throw shade at Ohio State because it was Illinois hoisting the Illibuck trophy and with the score in the background of 52-42 Illinois.
There is a Ohio State hater that is part of the programming of EA Sports, part of EA. There's no doubt about it. They were trolling Ohio State bad. And I think there was another one that people saw. If you froze they were showing a Penn State wideout, which of course made the trailer as it should. In the trailer, they're playing Ohio State, and I believe they showed the score blowing out Ohio State in the whiteout game. Like, they were
okay.
They were coming at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But no, other than that, nothing. I got literally zero excitement out.
Well, I got tons of excitement. My eight-year-old boy, a little over eight-year-old, he has just gotten into Madden. He is just absolutely obsessed with the sport of football. I don't know how he came about that. Just happens, I guess, sometimes. But he's loving Madden. So give it another 2 months, because I think it's July 19th is the release date of NCAA football 2025. And it's going to hit perfect in this house where I can play with him. I got to tell you this, it gives this dad, gets me a little excited. Along with, by the way, a clip of Iowa doing the wave, which I would have been disappointed had it not made the game, but it made the game. So I don't know. I had a pretty good day. I got a purchase order in today that I was waiting on, a couple of them. Man, I had a good Friday today, buddy.
Glad one of us did.
Okay. Well, maybe this will cheer you up. I don't know if it will, but let's give it a shot. All right. Hey, this is, you said, one of, if not your favorite podcast of the year, mailbag podcast, right?
No, it is. It's always, it's like a novelty podcast, right?
Yes.
It's quirky. It's fun. It's not too serious. We just let it rip and have a good time.
I love it. I love it. Some of them, this is just how it goes, folks. Some of them will organically stay on for a little while. Some of them we might go quick. Don't take that personally if you are one of the questioners to us. It's just, sometimes it's just the flow. It's how it goes. I think I did a pretty darn good job of getting almost everybody that asks us a question, but inevitably there's one or two that slip through. If I did miss you, I truly apologize. Then the second thing would be, there's a couple questions that were so good they have kind of need to morph into their own individual podcast almost. Like some of them, they're so expansive of a question. So maybe we can get to those in the off season as well. With that being said, should we just go ahead and dive in, big boy?
Let's do it, man.
All right. Shout out to my guy, Eric at Hawk Fat. First one in. I mean, as soon as I put it out for the mailbag questions he was in, and his is coming up. We're going to wait a little bit, then we will get into it. First one out.
This Love
is
Hawk from Fat.
Hawk Fat, great guy. First one out is from at IlliniCast. Illini, yep. Illinois, yes, but this is a broad question. I thought this would be a perfect one to
and
start
by the
out
way,
with.
Can I pause you right there and just mention it's Sonny Verma and Austin Berkland doing IlliniCast?
I don't know Austin as well. Sonny and I have gotten to know each other. Sonny is a great dude, one of my favorite guys on Twitter and in the podcast world. So give him a listen, even if you're not an Illini fan. So the IlliniCast question is, who is the coach, the Big Ten coach, on the hottest seat coming in to the season? Now, Kurt and I aren't, we won't devote an entire podcast to hot seat talking, but slipping in one question, I think, is pretty good. Don't you agree, Kurt? This is a good one.
No, I'm okay with slipping this question in. It's what our listeners want to hear, so I want to talk about it. But if nobody asked this question, we would never talk about this probably all year.
And I would say the hot seat topic isn't as hot itself as it used to be. But, like I said, it's a good one from Sonny and the crew.
That's a great point that you just made there. The hot seat topic is indeed not hot as it used to be.
It's ironic. All right. Wow. So the first thing I would like to pull out is first-year coaches. They're not applicable, correct? You can't be on the hot seat your first year.
Okay. Absolutely.
So that takes out Deshaun Foster, Sharon Moore, Jed Fish, the Siggy, Kurt Cignetti, and Jonathan Smith. They just are not, they're not a part of this. Then the other person that I just took out, it's not even up for debate, is Kirk Ferentz, because as the joke goes, he actually owns the thermostat. So I don't think he's going to turn up the heat on his own seat. That leaves us Ryan Day, Dan Lanning, James Franklin, Lincoln Riley, Luke Fickell, Matt Rhule, Brett Bielema, PJ Fleck, Greg Schiano, David Braun, Ryan Walters, and Mike Loxley. Big Kurt, I will let you start. Who do you think has got the hottest big seat?
Okay, it's hard to say hottest. So I kind of just, I eliminated three guys from that list. I eliminated Dan Lanning, Luke Fickell, Matt Rhule for various reasons.
Yes.
Ryan Day, the Ohio State fans are a little crazy. So it's been a few years since they beat Michigan. So if they lose to Michigan again this year and maybe lost one or two other games, I could see it happening. If the only game they lost was Michigan, I think that would be insane. James Franklin, kind of this similar temperature as Ryan Day, because you got a lot of these Penn State fans that just, they want a little more. They want to beat Ohio State again. They want to beat Michigan again. And they haven't been doing that. Lincoln Riley, last year was a disaster. Let's be honest. If we have another disaster, I could potentially see it. Bielema, obviously things have cooled off. If it looks really bad, I don't think he gets fired, but I guess it's a possibility. PJ Fleck, kind of, I'm going to throw him in with like kind of James Franklin, Ryan Day, where he's been there a while. Gopher fans, you know, obviously love him. I think they still love him overall, but it's just, you know, the relationship's getting long in the tooth. Are we going to go all in here, or are we going to go our separate ways? And maybe Greg Schiano, similar. So I kind of put all Day, Franklin, Riley, Bielema, PJ Schiano. They're almost all equivalent for me. I'm not sure I can pick one.
It's a warm seat for any of those, but there really isn't a hot seat here. We got ones that are, they're just like, ooh, it's like somebody was just sitting in the seat. That's the hot seat. That's as hot as it is.
Right.
So you're not even picking a winner in the hot seat contest.
Okay. Let me hear your line of thinking, and then maybe it'll trigger something for me. I can make a final decision here.
Okay. Here's what it is. Dan Lanning, not a chance. James Franklin, he would have to have a bad year this year for the seat to be hot. I can't.
But remember, they've had these sucky 10-2 seasons that have just sucked.
I'm picking up your sarcasm there. Lincoln Riley would be a third place candidate for me for hot seat. When you are at a blue blood program like USC, you can't have 2 7-5 seasons in a row. And it's going to be interesting because it's his first year in the Big Ten. We got more questions on the back end about that. Then there's something with just like, you need a certain fever pitch from the fan base in order to get you on the hot seat. So that kind of knocks out Brett Bielema. People want to see more from Matt Rhule and Luke Fickell, but that is not a hot seat. To me, it came down to two guys to have the hot seat on. Okay. PJ Fleck and Ryan Day. We got a Ryan Day question coming up. Ryan Day is not my answer. My answer is PJ Fleck. And I don't believe he should be on the hot seat, but I'm going off of the temperature of the own fan base. Yeah. And I'll say this, there's not a ton of Gopher fans that are screaming for his job, but there's not a lot of Gopher fans defending him as much anymore. And that is the beginning part of a true hot seat, along with the Vegas win total being at 5, I believe I saw. The signs are out there that things are going to heat up.
I don't think Lincoln Riley's on a hot seat, so to speak, but you just defined it for me. If he has a bad season, two bad seasons in a row at a blue blood, you can't do that. So I think he has the easiest path to getting fired. I'm going Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, not a bad answer.
And especially, like you said, adjusting to the Big Ten, that could be a disaster. We just don't know yet.
And I would say Ryan Day ranks high for both of us, correct? But just not quite at the top. Okay, and we will tackle Ryan Day in a little bit. All right, next question up from our guy, MJ Perk at Perkins Penguins, dripping with sarcasm here. Is Drew Allar the worst quarterback in football history? Should Penn State move him to backup tight end or maybe scout team placeholder on extra points? So
I haven't read the entire tweet, but worst quarterback in football history, obviously, if you listen to the fans of this sucky 10-2 program. No, here's the thing with Drew Allar. He hasn't looked great by any means, but he hasn't had a lot of weapons to throw to that, like we're used to seeing at Penn State. So I'm just hoping that changes this year, and I'd like to see him break out. He's obviously talented. I think, why don't we just give him a second year? Just see what happens.
Yeah. If I could speak for Perk and our guy, Jake, Penn State fans, here's my question. Who is complaining about Drew Allar the most? Penn State fans or Penn State's rivals? I know they don't have a rival, but you know what I mean? Penn State haters. That's the question to me. I don't know who's complaining about him more, because I see both on Twitter.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I was thinking, no, it's Penn State fans, but no, you're right. He gets crapped on quite a bit from other fan bases.
Way more than he should, which obviously is the basis of Perk's question. I got two things to say. You know, one of my favorite expressions, two things can be true at once. All right. Two things are true at once with Drew Allar. He is not as bad as the Twitter trolls make him out to be, but he has not looked like the five-star quarterback that Penn State fans had hoped it would look like. So definitely deserves to be the starter. I would be shocked if he isn't the starter. It will be interesting to see what Kotelecki will do with him this year with a couple weapons that we think maybe can get developed. Long story short, he doesn't deserve the heat, but this is a big year for Mr. Drew, and we'll see what he looks like in the 24 season. All right, next one up is from, and we got another question from Perk. I'm going to leave it till a little bit later. Next one up is from Tommy Hook at Thomas Hook. Do you expect Northwestern to progress or regress based off of their 8-5 win season? And what do you expect from their transfer quarterback, Mike Wright? Hate this question because it's not even June, and now we have to start predicting Northwestern football, which typically goes over like a pregnant pole vaulter for Kurt and I. Go ahead, you start.
Progress or regress? Gosh, I hate that I'm not taking sides in a lot of these. Expect them to be good again. I mean, you'd have to be insane to expect anything else at this point. I mean, with the second year, I guess I might expect some progression there. I'll go with over on the progression, yeah. Wow. And part of that is just the Illini fan in me.
Okay.
That's the negative Nancy. But yeah, I guess I pretty much always expect progression from them.
And and it makes me nervous to answer this, of course, but I got asked the question, so I have to honestly answer it. I have to say regress. I have to say regress.
Okay, one more thing I'm going to point out is they're playing in the cat box, as we're calling it now.
Yes.
So
let's get to that. Let's get to that. Let's answer.
But
this
I think
first.
That's going to be an advantage. Right?
I do too. Like I got that. I should have told you ahead of time. I got that down next. But we will talk about that. Okay. So I have to choose, correct? So I choose regress. I choose regress.
Yeah.
Because
I mean it makes sense.
Yeah, and because what's going on here is, you look at the record last year, so 7-5 regular season, and then win the bowl, so they get to 8 wins. But here's the issue, okay? You look at this schedule.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the schedule.
Duke, at Washington, at Maryland, Wisconsin, at Iowa, at Purdue, Ohio State, at Michigan, Illinois. So that's 9 games right there. So they have to go 3-0. Okay. They have to go 3-0 non-conference.
Wow.
And then they have to win 4 of those 9 right there.
You flipped me. I'm going regression. I think I have to. See, I'm going to regret that.
You will regret the double regression is what you're saying. Yeah. We shouldn't do that. We should not do that. But we are trying to answer this honestly. And that is a thoroughly hard schedule. I've been playing with this thing of looking at last year's schedules to this year and what is perceived to be harder, what is actually harder. With Northwestern, it's actually harder what their schedule looks like. But let's give this a positive spin here to Northwestern fans. For people that don't know, Northwestern Stadium, Ryan Field, has been imploded. All right. They somehow found a machinery big enough to get through the grass that they grow on Ryan Field. That's kind of a joke, right? And rip it all down. There was one shot you saw where only the press box was sitting up right there. So it's all going to be gone. They're going to play on their practice field, which I believe they call Martin Field. I thought it should be called like Martin Field by, you know, James and Linda Van Schleckenberg. I mean, that's what it seems like it would be for Northwestern. Our guy Soup is the one that came up with calling it. He trademarked it. So we got to give him his just cause, the cat box, which is absolutely fantastic.
And I'm going to go a step further. I'm just going to call it the litter box, because to be honest, I think it's a shit concept. I really do.
You don't like what they're doing here?
No.
Oh, Kurt, really? Is that the Illinois hater in you?
No, it's just not becoming of a Big Ten program to do something like this.
I agree with that by itself, but the...
And by the way, who tears down their stadium and doesn't even know where they're going to play? They don't have a plan.
Well, I think Big NU fan, you know, podcast follower would back you up on that. I don't believe the health of the football program was in mind when they put some of this stuff in play. Like, I think they just... kind of had a general idea what they wanted to do, but not an actual plan to pull it out. So I do agree with you there. With that being said, I like novelty items, and the novelty of a 15,000, let's just, I think it's 14,500 hot ticket. You'll actually see a quote unquote packed house for a Northwestern home game.
Now
I would love to go to one of those games in the Cat Box.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm really looking forward to seeing it for the first time on TV.
Yes, I am too. Like, will it have like a, like, I hate to say this, but like a big time high school atmosphere?
Yes.
So even though there's high schools in Texas that see.
Well, that's what it's going to look like. It's going to feel like one of those national televised Texas games. That's what it's going to look like.
Yes. I can't wait to see it. And I think it's the novelty of it that is interesting. And let's be honest, if there's one program that you would see this transpire, Northwestern seems to be the right fit. By the way, right on Lake Michigan, too. That's
gonna
be the
other. literal like, feet.
Yes.
From Lake Michigan.
Yes. The wind that's gonna be coming up.
Oh my lord.
Oh, it's gonna be incredible.
And again, that's why I think they'll have a huge advantage
in some of those games.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's couple. There's a couple that's going to be played. Two that's played in Wrigley, and then Soldier. Shit.
Two at Wrigley.
So I thought
it's Wrigley.
They're both Wrigley.
Ohio State and Illinois are at Wrigley.
Okay. Oh, that's right.
The other ones are at the Litter Box.
And you told me offline you're going to try to make the Friendly Confines game.
Yeah, I think I might try that. Yeah. Visit the confines for the first time. I'm going to end my boycott of the confines potentially. And visit for the first time in over 20 years.
I think you'll like what you see. I think you'll like it. Last time I was there was for the Morgan Wallen concert last year. Shout out to my boy Zed.
By the way, you skipped over one part of his question. What about transfer quarterback Mike Wright?
By the way, shout out to Zed and my boy Aaron for that concert. As far as Mike Wright, everybody gets a little too jazzed up for the transfer quarterback coming in because it's a different guy throwing the ball. So Mike Wright is athletic. He's not particularly accurate. We'll see. But I do believe he fits what this style of offense wants to do. I am excited to see it. I don't even know if he's 100% the starter, but it is an interesting person to take a look at.
You know what I think about him? I think he'll be all right.
Ooh, good for you. Nice work.
And another thing, Ryan Helinski is still there.
Yes.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
Dear Lord.
Most people that leave Northwestern are doctors, but he's just there as long as a doctor going to school. So good for
right.
him. Yep. Hey, let's stay in the land of Lincoln. How about that? The Kingfisher. For Brett's whole tenure, the defense has been the known commodity and offensive question. With the roles more or less reversed this year, does it make a difference in regards to a bowl berth? And then I'm going to partner this up with Drew Pershing at Drew Pershing. Are Illinois fans rightly optimistic about the offense? So we got always optimistic about everything, Kingfisher.
Yep.
Drew Pershing, also very optimistic, but perennial wet blanket Illini fan Kurt right here. Are we somewhere in the middle with Illinois' offense, or what are we thinking here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not as optimistic as Kingfisher, but to answer Drew's question, are Illinois fans rightfully optimistic? Yes, I think there's a reason to be optimistic about the offense. There's a lot of pieces there. Now, granted, you've got a few transfers on the offensive line that are expected to plug in and play right away, and you just never know how that's going to turn out. But on paper, yes, there is potential to be a solid to even pretty damn good offense. Also, could get some news very shortly here about another transfer wide receiver, Zachary Franklin. Now, he is a known commodity to offensive coordinator Barry Lunney because he played for Barry Lunney at UTSA when UTSA smoked Illinois in Brett Bielema's first season, and he had a huge game, absolutely killed the Illini. So we want him desperately. And to be honest, if we get Zachary Franklin, I feel really good about the wide receiver room, and I still feel good about the quarterback position, especially now that I think we've got some depth there too.
Yeah.
Running back room, solid to pretty good.
Yep.
And so, I mean, all the pieces are there. Could it be really good? Yeah, I think if Lunny, you know, does the right things, puts the right scheme out there, yes, they could be a very good offense. The D scares me.
D scares you. Lunny has gotten to the point with the Illini fan base where we feel very comfortable with Barry Lunny. I mean, okay. Because I felt like that was a roller coaster with Lunny last year. Did we end on a high enough note or something?
No, we ended on a high note, but we're talking about four games or something like that. It's like, okay, maybe he's coming together here. Before that, he was under fire.
Yes, that's kind of what I'm getting at. And I would say part of the fire was the O-line. And what I'm getting from you is there is the potential for the O-line to be good if all the new humans gel. But is that it? Is that the biggest key for Illinois?
The biggest key. Yeah. And probably Luke making a little bit quicker decisions. The two of those things together.
I do like Luke. And you know, you just sit there and think all those offensive lines I get when Brett Bielema was at Wisconsin, the O-line factory was in place before Brett got there. I got it, but he's a line guy. And you would think O-line would be at the forefront of what he wants to run his offense behind. This would be the year that you would expect / want to see that out of the O-line. Fair enough?
Yes.
Yeah, I would say that's the key. All right, moving on to expansion crush.
Well, hold on. Are we going to do Kingfisher's second question?
I do got a second question. I got it right here because we got a whole newbie section at the end because his question is about the newbies, which is what I'm calling USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington. So I got that one because that's at the end. So we will get to that. Sorry, I should have let you know. All right, moving on to expansion crush at expansion. Expansion crush. Is that hard to say or is that just me? Odds of Indiana landing 5-star quarterback Julian Lewis. For those that don't know, Julian Lewis is a high school 5-star quarterback currently committed to USC, but took a visit to Indiana. He's also got upcoming visits to USC again, Auburn. What are the odds? Hoosiers land a 5-star quarterback.
Yeah, so if you'd asked me this question 3 years ago, I would have said one in infinity. But times have changed. And this is the one thing that I've been waiting to happen is a highly touted quarterback. Now, he's not a consensus 5-star. He's not a composite 5-star. He's a 5-star in one of the rankings, which is on 3. He's a 4-star in the other one. But this is a really highly sought after recruit. I'm waiting for a guy like that, especially at the quarterback position, to look at all the blue bloods and say,
yes,
I'm not going to play right away. I want to go somewhere and play right away and go to an Indiana and basically kind of use it as a minor league system to get some reps under his belt. And then, you know, even maybe tell the coaching staff, my plan is come in, have a great year, go somewhere else. And why wouldn't Indiana take him up on that?
Yeah. Who's not going to take that?
Right.
As far as to answer the question odds, I would say 50-1 odds. But as you said before, there was a time where that was 10,000-1 odds. The fact that Indiana got him in, and I know there's a connection between the new staff and Julian Lewis, so that's part of it. Odds on favorite is he still goes to quarterback guru in USC. But with that being said, it's intriguing. I love what you brought up. There is every horrible thing has a beautiful side to it. And vice versa. This is the good side to the transfer portal and NIL. I do believe we will get to the point where the 5-star humans, not just quarterback, just players, will start to dilute out a little bit to the non-blue blood teams. If that's what happens, we will truly enter an era of college football where any team can catch that hot quarterback for a year and make a playoff run. I'm not saying win it all, because I think that takes, but for somebody like Indiana, catching that hot quarterback going 9-3, something like that, that would be incredible, right? So who's to say that couldn't happen? Sticking in with the Hoosiers, looks like Indiana football has one of the best wide receiver rooms in the Big. This is by Hooparazzi, by the way, at Krabby from Green. best wide receiver rooms in the Big. Can a potent offense win enough games to see a bowl?
Okay, so we're going with
Yeah, there's a lot.
Okay.
So
what
we're saying here
question,
is, yes,
but can they win enough to see a bowl game?
So essentially what Hooperazzi is saying here is exciting, awesome room, you know, wide receiver room for Indiana. That in itself, and I'll say, okay, Siggy, he loves to pitch the ball around. Okay, he's not afraid to throw it around, get aggressive. So now we got these big vibes going with Siggy and these wide receiver talent.
So, yeah.
Is this enough to get Indiana into a bowl? Now, what you have
First
to do
all,
is, yeah, you have to look at the Indiana Hoosier room to start with.
The wide receiver room?
Wide receiver room.
Yeah, the wide receiver room. I love Donovan McCulley.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, the guy absolutely owned the Illini last year. Unstoppable. Couldn't even slow him down. But outside of that, I'm not really sure.
I know.
And who he's referring to the great receiver room.
And sometimes you wonder, is there a little bit of tongue in cheek happen with some of these questions? But Donovan McCulley, Donovan McCulley, I love. After that, shout out to John Alden and some of my guys, Hoosier Al that helped me out. But Anderson Cody, Miles Price has come over from Texas Tech, and Miles Cross. We got miles and miles of Miles in the wide receiver room. He's come from Ohio. So
okay,
we got potential. Okay, we got potential. But are you looking at the schedule?
I'm looking at the schedule. Yeah. There's wins there. Florida International, Western Illinois. They go to UCLA, bad UCLA team. That's winnable. Charlotte's winnable. Maryland's winnable. Northwestern. I mean, they play Purdue, Nebraska, Michigan State. There's a lot of winnable games here. As I'm looking at the schedule, yes, they could make a bowl game.
Yes. So you got there. So I looked at their schedule and just kind of, you know, went across it. I'm like, okay, six out of these, I said seven or eight winnable games are right there. So getting to a bowl, 6-6, essentially on the table. And I want to say this, I like Siggy. Like I've told Indiana fans, I'm going to like Siggy until he beats Iowa. Then I think I'm going to hate him because I think that's how he is. He's cocky and bombastic. But I think that's what you need to get eyeballs on the Hoosiers. Yeah. And here's what I think I'm seeing, and we'll talk more about this in the deep dives in the summer. Siggy is not afraid to go flashy on offense. Isn't that what the Hoosiers should be? Different. Something, you know, like take shots down the field. If we're going to win this game, win it 52-48 type of deal. Like, I feel like that's in the Hoosiers' DNA, a.k.a. basketball on grass a little bit. Then on defense, Siggy is just, dude, he'll blitz on first, second, third down. I want to see how that works. I think that is the way to do it. It's going to be interesting. I love having Hoosier football fans back in the fold. Good. Okay. And then kind of along those lines, fun question. Will Indiana football sneak up on a few teams and be the surprise team in the big? They got a chance, right? So, that's what we're saying.
I mean, but I don't know how sneaky it would be after all those teams I just named off. I'm not like, do I think they're, you know, okay. You know, another one is Washington. Washington's got a whole new roster. I mean, you got Michigan, you got Ohio State. Those are unwinnable. Every other game they could win. They have a chance to win. They're winnable games. They got 10 winnable games. So I don't think they're sneaking up at any of those teams, but they could be the surprise team.
If you look down in the schedule, I agree with you. As it stands right now, people are not going to be considering Indiana as a 5-7 win team. So if they get there, that is a sneak up deal. But I do agree with what you're saying. You beat me to the punch there, because I was going to say, when you looked at Indiana's schedule, they seem to be one of those teams with the change in, you know, the divisions or whatever for this year, at least. They could be the one that takes advantage of it. Big year for Siggy. If he jumps up and gets an eighth win in a bowl game, that could be absolutely huge. All right.
Light it up.
Next one is from Robert Ranny at RRRanny1. Can Purdue's pass defense take a big step this year? So maybe worth noting, I would ask you, Troy Walters' defense took a big step up, I believe, in the second year with Illinois. Now, personnel had something to do with that.
I mean, it was really, it really started to gel at the end of his first year.
And I don't know if we saw that as much from Purdue last year. Maybe
no.
it got a little bit better. Let's, you know, like you could remember, was it Fresno State at the beginning of the year? You know, that was basketball on grass, if we're calling something. I will say Purdue's defense got, you know, I'm going to correct myself. I did think it got a little bit better. Can it take another step up? It did. The reason it took a step up at Illinois is because you had an absolute alpha dog in the secondary. And, and kudos to Troy Walters for using him as he did. So my question would be, do we have personnel that will allow Troy Walters to take a step up? That's what's going to be interesting to see.
Right. That's what I was going to say is, especially looking back, we see that Lovey left some great pieces for Ryan Walters to use. I don't think the same was the case when Brown left Purdue. So has he shored that up that quickly? And also, not only did they have great pieces in the defensive backfield, but the front five, and not just the edges, they were getting pass rush from the interior of the front five. Is Purdue going to do that? So I don't expect him to do something like he did at Illinois just yet. But look what he just did. He got Terrion Grant, a four-star cornerback. I think he's the highest-rated cornerback in the class of 25, reclassifying for 24. Right. He's on campus right now. I don't know that I expect him to necessarily play this year a lot, but that's a huge get for him. He's already shown the ability that he showed at Illinois to consistently put his free safety in a position to make interceptions, fumble recoveries, things like that. So I still have faith in him. I still think he's going to be good. I just think it's going to be a more of a slower arc than what he had at Illinois.
There you go. The question was, can they take a big step up on pass defense? I would say a encouraging step up on pass defense. Maybe not a big one. Second question by Robert. Does Graham Harrell again make short yardage running way harder than it needs to be? Typically when you get, he probably does. That's just how Graham Harrell's style of offensive coordinators typically are. They probably like throwing on short yardage more than they like running the ball. But sometimes what you see is such heat from the fan base and maybe internally somehow that there could be an adjustment, but I would have to see it in practice first before I could speak to it. All right. Yep. Next question up from our guy, Danimal. Is Max Brosmer realistically the answer at quarterback for the Gophers? Let me just throw a couple things out to you, Kurt, and the listeners. So Max Brosmer, transfer quarterback from New Hampshire, FCS level, 6'2", 210-pound grad student. He's old. Second team FCS All-American, good yardage, good completion percentage, phenomenal touchdown to interception. Talent is talent. Is he that talented? That is going to be huge for how the Gophers do this year.
Okay, so is he the answer? Well, he's got to be this year. And I think he's got a much better shot to be that than AK Ocho did. And I expect the floor to be a solid Big Ten quarterback. And I think he could be a really good Big Ten quarterback.
You got to love when a guy has that much experience in any capacity. There is just something about a 23-year-old dude. You are a dude, okay? Like, I remember when I got to Iowa, we had a freshman camp, which was hard. But then the big boys came in for regular camp. And when the first time you get hit by a grown-ass man, it's a deal. There's like there's just an aura about a dude that knows this is his last chance to possibly play this sport. I think that's what you get out of Max Brosmer. Now, I agree that the floor should be pretty high. I don't know about the ceiling yet, but PJ Fleck has shown that some of the best teams he's had, playing it close to the best, defense and whatnot. So is that what Gopher fans want, or would they rather see it get opened up with a talented quarterback? I don't got those answers right now. I have to listen to Ryan Burns and see how things, but that's what's intriguing about the Gophers this year is what style of offense are we going to get? The Eyes on Big podcast is sponsored by the Amador Whiskey Company. Our unique process takes the highest quality Kentucky bourbon and finishes in California wine barrels. This double barrel aging technique creates characteristics from the individual barrels that are blended together to make an exceptional whiskey. Perfect sip, neat, or in your favorite bourbon cocktail, Amador is the perfect go-to this fall on game day. Amador Whiskey Company, born in Kentucky, raised in California. All right, we kind of enter into the Hawkeye section here after the somewhat midpoint break here. So shout out to, again, to my guy, Eric at HawkFet. So we're going to we got kind of a rapid fire Iowa section here, but we're going to start out with Eric's fun question. I did throw it out on Twitter, throw out a question about your team, maybe throw something fun out there. Here is his second question that we'll answer first here. Top three Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and why they are your favorite. I will let you start, Big Kurt.
Okay, I get to go with all three of mine?
Yep.
Okay, Predator the original is his best movie. It was so original, and I absolutely loved the alien in that movie and the camaraderie that they were able to build with all the characters so quickly as they got dropped into the jungle was great. And then, of course, the Carl Weathers versus Arnold Schwarzenegger dichotomy was great. Next is Running Man. Not as good as the book. The book was unbelievable, but I loved the movie and I saw the movie first. That's why I read the book. So I'm giving credit there. Richard Dawson, if we're talking, deeper into it, was so good in that freaking movie. Stop. Okay.
And you have always said what people say is Richard Dawson's character in The Running Man is a closer assimilation to what Richard Dawson was in real life, correct?
Yeah, right. That's what I've heard. So then my number three, this one was tough. I had Terminator 2 as my number three. It was such a blockbuster. I just remember watching that with my buddies. We didn't watch it in the theater, but we were watching it in my living room, and I had such a great time watching it. It was just such a big movie, right?
Yes, yes.
And I was the right age for it too. And that edged out for me Total Recall, which at the time I just absolutely loved seeing that in the theaters. But if you watch it now, it has not aged well.
It has aged like a banana. You have to watch it as a parody movie now. It's almost like Flash Gordon, pretty much, is how it's always come into. Yes. Running Man just missed. Running Man just missed for me. Here's how I knew. I knew what my number three and number one was going to be, if this makes any sense. It was my number two that I struggled with. So number three for me, True Lies. I absolutely loved True Lies. Shout out to Hawk Tom Arnold, who plays the goofy, fun sidekick. Tom Arnold's best role, and maybe his only good role, but he was phenomenal for that role in the movie. And then shout out to Jamie Lee Curtis's cans in that movie. She was absolutely incredible. That was why I had to make True Lies number three. So number two, I couldn't make up my mind. It was hard between Running Man, but I went with T2, Terminator 2. James Cameron, here's what's crazy. That movie's like early 90s. The CGI still plays.
Yeah.
It's still like when James Cameron went after it back in the day, like The Abyss. Remember The Abyss? That was a great movie too. Phenomenal. Like,
yes,
he crushed it, man. Like, it still looks good. There's a good story behind it. I had to do Terminator 2 and then number one. It's the GOAT. It's Predator. I mean, it is the ultimate machismo vehicle. The memes that it makes, you know, with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers, with the humor is raw. The violence is raw. And then just set deep in the jungle. And then I want to give a shout out to the whoever did the music, but that drum beat in the background.
Oh, is just
iconic, man. Iconic. That movie is.
Okay. And how, first of all, underrated scene is that as they're flying in the helicopter and they're playing Long Tall Sally.
Yes.
And then the camouflage nature of the Predator. I just remember seeing that for the first time, thinking how cool that was. And then his little scope there with the triangle that would focus in. And then when he'd get cut and he had the fluorescent blood, just so much.
So much good stuff.
Never a dull moment.
An arm going flying out. By the way, the guy that wound up playing Predator was like a 7-foot skinny actor that said, you know who the original Predator was, who was actually on the set. And he hated it so much and the crew hated him so much that they fired him.
Oh,
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Get out of here.
That is correct. You can look that one up.
Wow. So Looking back at that, because they put a muscle suit on the 7 foot guy, right?
Yes, yes.
So when he like when he's walking around, he reminded me his body reminded me of Simeon Rice.
That is fantastic.
Like this tall, long, muscular dude.
I would hope Simeon Rice would take that as a compliment.
I mean it as a compliment.
I mean, he's an apex predator. I mean, that's what's good. So is Simeon Rice.
Simeon was that.
Yes, that's fantastic. All right. Okay. Good question, Fat. Nice work. You guys going. All right. So what I'm going to do is this is the Iowa section. It's basically five questions about Iowa's quarterbacks. And then I'm going to toss it to you because I want you to be the first one to ask. Okay. Now, this is Hawk Fett's first question. In fairness, he asked this a couple weeks ago. Things have changed since then. Iowa has a serious issue at quarterback right now. Cade isn't healthy, yet is prone to injuries. Also, we have no depth with any experience behind him. Without getting a quarterback in the portal, what else can Iowa do to compensate this issue? Next question up from Doug Wagner. Is Lester going to be able to make a dent in his first year? Adam Helm. Kurt, what would Kurt, an outsider, consider a successful season for Tim Lester? So this is Iowa quarterback, Iowa new offensive coordinator, Tim Lester, kind of molded together, and I give it to you. You tell me what you're thinking.
Okay, so obviously with the addition of Brendan Sullivan, the quarterback room is looking a lot better. I think Brendan Sullivan, if he's pressed into duty, and let's be honest, he probably will play at some point this season. I think with a competent offensive coordinator, he can be a solid quarterback. We've seen that he has been solid at Northwestern. I'm a little surprised he transferred. Things have been so bad. And so I know a lot of fans blame Kirk a lot for that too. So that what would I consider success? This I thought about for a little while. Because they were, 125th, somewhere around 130th?
Lower, yeah.
130th, okay. I thought about saying just top 100. Somewhere between, 80 and 100, I guess. Okay. If you can get between 80 and 100, and I'm kind of erring closer to 80, I'll just say 90. I'm going to put it right in the middle. Can they get top 90? Because any solid coordinator should be able to do that.
So,
the one thing going against them is the fact that they're such a defensive-minded team. They're never going to be great on offense. But still, I think I'm going to put it at 90. That's all my over-under mark there.
Because we're kind of looking at Adam Helm at Jim Warrior. What would you consider a successful season? So you set the over-under for total offense at 90.
90.
Anything under that, good season for Lester. Okay.
Yeah.
I would add that the quarterback situation for Iowa turned almost overnight. All right. I was getting anxious, truth be told. Kay doesn't look healthy. I had heard rumblings about a quarterback coming in, but I'm not seeing anything concrete. Then boom, Brendan Sullivan comes in. I went back last week and I listened to an old podcast with Jordan and I. We did semi-gush about Brendan Sullivan after the Maryland game and a couple other games. Mm-hmm. We're like, we see some talent here. Do I think he's as good as what some Hawkeye fans make him out to be? No. Do I think he's as bad? We're not going to miss him at all as what Northwestern fans make him out to be? No, he is a solid Big Ten quarterback and a very important addition to the team. Then, almost at the same time, a video came out of Cade McNamara at a softball game running and sprinting and making like a diving play and looking way more hell, right. You shouldn't be running and diving in a softball game. I agree with that. But long story short is everybody went, ooh, Cade's moving around well. As Kirk Ferentz keeps pointing out, Michael Penix came back from a double ACL and looked pretty darn good his senior year. It's not like it's unprecedented with today's medical, marvels that we can do. The quarterback room looks better. I believe in Tim Lester. I have from the get-go. I was one of the few Iowa people that did. I do expect it to look better. I'm with you in that 90 range. My has always been 88. Do you remember me saying in the 88th ranked offense is what I want?
88, okay. Well, I was close.
Yeah. You were darn close. The last thing I would say is if the offense just looks better, Iowa fans, Iowa writers, you know, it's possible to just be happy for Tim Lester and the offensive players and not crap on Brian Ferentz every single time the offense gets a first down. I'd just like to throw that challenge out there. It's not like Brian Ferentz wanted the offense to struggle as much as it did. Okay. Fair. All right. I don't remember him sacrificing a puppy on the sidelines at Kinnick Stadium that you would think people did. All right. Last other question here for Iowa. Even without Cooper DeJean, is this one of Iowa's best defensive backfields across all positions? This is a good defensive backfield. Sebastian Castro at cornerback. I have seen PFF putting stuff out there. Xavier Wampa is a great safety. We got another safety, Schulte, coming back that has been one of those guys that seems like he's been there forever. This is a very solid first lineup for defensive backs. I'm a little concernicus about the depth. So that is something that I like, Entringer and a couple other guys that I've heard about, but I just haven't seen it. So absolutely love the starting five, because that's typically what we do. But the depth past cornerback, that's something I'm a little bit concerned about. Fair enough.
Fair. And I'm deferred to you.
Okay. And then our guy, Doug Wagner, had one more question. Brits Pub. Downtown bar, Brits Pub, lawn bowling, yes or no? Kurt?
Okay, well.
And I should probably set that up for people that would have idea.
Yeah, go set that up, yeah.
There is a bar downtown called Brits Pub. It's got a British theme to it. Got great Scotch eggs. They're phenomenal. Good beer selection. And then you go upstairs and out, and there is a full, not full, but a pretty big lawn that is up there. And
it's a rooftop. It's a rooftop lawn.
Rooftop
downtown
lawn.
Minneapolis.
Downtown Minneapolis. They put lawn bowling, a.k.a. bocce or bochi, as some people pronounce it. Have you ever done it, and did you enjoy it? Yes or no?
I've never done it at Brits. I have done lawn bowling before. The thing is, I don't need a game to have fun drinking, but I need to drink to have fun playing a game. So... if you're gonna force me, to play,
that could be on a t-shirt right there. That was really good.
So I guess ultimately no, I'd rather not do it. I'd rather just sit there and drink my beer or Amador, whatever I'm having that night.
I am a yes. There was a time where I did it somewhat often for a while there, like 3 or 4 times in like one summer. And then you're like, okay, I've done that enough. And then it kind of wore off. But there was some other stuff that they did. They used to have yoga classes up there. And it was the beginning time of yoga pants. That's how old I am. So that was in the aughts when your boy was single. It was Brits Pub was a good place to be back in the day. All right. Switching on to the active duty Husker. What player... not named Dylan Raiola needs to have a big season for the Huskers to go bowling. I want to shout out to Active Duty Husker. Great question. I didn't answer him in the DM because I had my answer. Before I could even answer, he answered his own question in the DM. I just want to say, Active Duty Husker, I would have had this same question or answer, excuse me, but you beat me to it. I'm going to go with kicker Tristan Alvano and just general special teams play. I have faith in the Tony White defense. Okay. I believe the Tony White defense will be a very good Tony White defense. Okay. Now he's also assuming from the question that we know that Dylan Raiola has to stay healthy, be the guy. So if it's not that, and I trust Tony White's defense, there's going to come down to a game or two where field position from the punter and then namely their kicker is going to be huge. That would be my answer.
I'm going with the offensive line, the entire offensive line.
Okay. All right. Have been trying to best word the fun one. This is also active duty Husker. The Huskers are not short of appointing quote unquote saviors of our program throughout big history. Who would have been the appointed saviors of any particular program, whether they hit or not. I'm just going to throw out Iowa's. It was a guy named Willie Guy. Yeah. Do you remember Willie Guy?
No.
A name that rings. That's probably why you don't remember him, because he was a high recruit that did not hit. But every program has got that guy that we thought was going to be incredible, and it just didn't work out.
And I was trying to remember the really highly touted running back from Minnesota. I forgot to look it up. I can't remember his name. It just did not pan out at all. How about the big Penix at Indiana? And it did. You know, temporarily saved them. I was thinking, I mean, so these aren't failures so far, but Juice Williams, that was going to save the Illini program, right? And it did for a while, and then it faded back. How about, speaking of Iowa, Jake Christensen? Wasn't he the savior?
He was not. But
I mean, he was supposed to be that.
But Iowa fans wanted him to nail him up to a cross by the time he left. So I guess that's as close.
Okay,
as
good one. Yep. What one that's apropos? Drew Allar.
Ooh, yeah. And it's not a save. It's not that Penn State needed saving. But
And that's a great point, because now I'm getting to a different territory here. Graham Mertz, it didn't need to be saved, but that was supposed to be the next big step up. How about Hunter Johnson at Northwestern?
Yes,
was one.
That's another good one.
Here's a blast from the past. Probably many of the traditional Big Ten fans won't know, and probably certainly not the four new teams. Tom Savage, quarterback at Rutgers. He was supposed to be this.
That's a good one.
He was like a five-star quarterback at Rutgers, and he just showed up, and he's kind of okay for a while, and then he ended up transferring. Alex Smith, running back.
Oh, Alex Smith. Then I think of Michigan, like Wilton Spate and like Drew Henson. Like those guys.
Drew Henson. Yeah. That's a good one. Yes.
Yeah. Man, that could be its own podcast right there, where we have to take like submittals from fan bases.
Yeah, and I would have to spend – that's when I would spend a ton of time researching.
I would just go back
and do Google search after Google search.
Would Jeff George be in there?
I mean, so Jeff George, there was no such thing as a five-star at the time, but he was a five-star, and he started out at Purdue because he wanted to play for that coach. Getting his name right now. But anyway, coach leaves. So then he was going to go to Miami, ends up at Illinois because he wanted to play for Mike White, who was airing it out. Then Mike White's suddenly gone. He ends up playing for Makovic, who's more of a conservative guy. So it didn't pan out the way he really wanted it to. But yeah, probably because Mike White was having trouble getting a quarterback, which was strange because he had been so good early on throwing the ball. But here's another one.
Wait, real quick. How many teams would Jeff George would have played for if the NIL and transfer rules were the same then?
Oh, Lord.
They are now? All of them. He would have played for all of the programs.
He'd been transferring midseason. But then also, how about the 2016 Michigan State recruiting class?
Oh, the entire class. Oh, Dougie. Dougie is just breaking his neck, shaking it right now. All right. State in Nebraska and in the quarterback room. Good question from our guy, Captain Bug Eater. For Huskers, how much does the new quarterback room, including the new quarterback coach, actually change run first rules approach to offense in 2024? My answer would be that it would not change it. You run first when you have young quarterbacks. So right now, for people that don't know, we got Rayola and Kalen, right? Then also Heinrich Harburg. So we have two freshman quarterbacks and a running quarterback. What I think you can pretty much assume is that defensive coordinators at the beginning of the year will bring people up to the line of scrimmage to say, let's see what the young guy has.
Yeah.
The question would be, does Matt Rhule get funky with it and throw over top of them because they have that much confidence in Dylan Rayola? But typically, you would protect a young quarterback by running the ball and playing defense. So it's a really intriguing question. I don't know if I have the answer, but it's going to be what you're going to be looking for at the beginning of the year for Nebraska.
I guess you just better hope the outcome changes a lot, because the quarterbacks were dog shit last year. And I think,
but that's why we have a new quarterback. We have a new quarterback coach now that Nebraska fans have a ton of faith in. It is going to be an improvement over OC quarterback situation last year. We'll see. I mean, I watched Dylan Raiola in the spring. I mean, you can see the talent. The guy has talent.
And the passing's not going to be worse than last year. It's going to be better than last year, which I think will open up the running game too.
Yes, I would say most things about the offense are going to look better, mostly because of Dylan Raiola and the offensive coach's confidence in him. It's a good question. It's going to be intriguing to see, but I think they run the ball quite a bit. Next one is coming from Gavin Hansen. I'd like to preface this by saying this is a Gopher fan asking this question. Why do you think after another year of winning the offseason that Nebraska will still win 5 or 6 games? I think what he means by that is, why would this be any different than any other offseason for Nebraska? I would say Matt Rhule in his second year is the biggest reason on why I would believe this is different and that Nebraska gets to a bowl or beyond.
And I'm going to go second reason, that schedule is manageable.
Extremely manageable.
Yeah.
I would say the biggest factors are that schedule, even more so Matt Rhule, and that what I think we'll get out of Dylan Raiola. There's a reason that their Vegas win total, I believe, was at 7.5. That is a huge jump over just making a bowl. That's a full comfortable game to give up over making a bowl. So one would expect Nebraska to make a bowl. I'm unless something drastically changes in my deep dives that I do, you know, in the middle of the summer, that's what I would expect. So Gopher fans, Hawkeye fans, Wisconsin fans, any fans that hate Nebraska, I think the train is coming to an end of Nebraska not going to the postseason. Here's a question from a guy you might know. Jordan Eggleston at JW Eggleston 7. We got another one just dripping with sarcasm. Just I might have to wring it out after I get done asking it. Is Michigan really going to go 7-5 like all our rivals keep saying? Also, where is this hammer I keep hearing about dropping?
Where does it drop from exactly?
Yeah. What is the, obviously what Jordan is alluding to is chiefly Ohio State and Michigan State fans, but also the collection of Michigan haters that are out there predicting that all the talent is gone, the coach is gone, Michigan is going to drop off the table and die in the wilderness. What say you about the 2024 Michigan Wolverines?
Yeah, I've seen an orgy of tweets that are negatively directed towards Michigan. Yeah, obviously they're going to take a step back. They're not going to go back-to-back here. They're not set up to do that right now. But, yeah, they're going to win more than 7 games. They've been recruiting so well for so long, and we see that Harbaugh and his staff developed so well. And there's continuity with someone taking over that's already on the staff. So there's a lot to like here. They'll probably take a while to kind of
gel a little bit.
Imagine them looking a little sloppy early on. And then I think it's going to look fine by midseason. And they'll put together a pretty solid year.
Pretty solid year, yeah. And the other hammer thing could be the hammer that drops from the NCAA that abolishes everything Michigan's done in the last 100 years. Don't think it's going to happen. I've been saying it essentially. No, that's just not. If you think this is what happens, you haven't been paying attention, to give an old quote there from Game of Thrones. I think Michigan will be fine there. People that are concentrating on Harbaugh being gone and questions at quarterback. The questions at quarterback concern me the most. I don't know what to expect or nor do I have phenomenal positive feelings about the quarterback situation.
Would you say you have an orgy of questions?
Yeah, I do. Dang it. Your first one in. Nice work. Good job. I don't know if Michigan fans are going to feel like joining an orgy after watching the passing game early on in the season, but that defense, if you're not paying attention, the Michigan defense might not miss a beat. Unless Wink really messes with it, that Michigan defense is going to be incredible again. That alone will get them probably to 9 wins. If their offense can do a little bit of something, they're right back into it, which kind of leads us into the next question from our guy Jordan. On a more serious note, over under 3.5 teams making the college football playoff from the Big Ten, or as I like to see, the Big 1-8. That's the new logo, which I love, the B-1-8, which is pretty good. It's a good question. Here, okay, so 3.5 over or under. I'll start out by saying this. Two for sure, right? The two teams that are in the Big Ten championship are moving on to the college football playoff, regardless of one that loses. Then it comes into the next two teams. We know we feel good about the third one, hence Jordan's question 3.5. It's going to be close. I'm going to say this. If that fourth team that could get in is Iowa, we're going under. We're only going to get three teams in. If that fourth team is a blue blood or somebody that looks more exciting, then we would get that fourth team. I'm going to say under. I'm going to say the Big Ten will only get three teams in the college football playoff here on May
6th. Okay. I'm going under, but for totally different reasons. The SEC is going to be yearly minimum three teams, but probably most years four teams.
Four.
So three teams plus four, you don't have a lot of spots left. So for me, my standard is always going to be under 3.5 for the Big Ten.
And then there could be years where it just looks so strong going into it, but it's going to be how these games play out. There's going to be one of the teams in the top three that is going to disappoint. Can one of the teams projected four and below jump up? That's what's going to be the fun part. From Jake at Jake Bushnell from Ohio State fans, is this a beat Michigan or fired year for Ryan Day based on the talent retention / transfer portal additions / recent hot seat appearances / Michigan draft losses, meaning all the teams or all the players that went into the draft for Michigan? Long story short, so, Ryan Day, hot seat, got to beat Michigan, college football playoff, go.
Yeah, so the roster is loaded, although I'm not super confident at quarterback the way that I had been previously with Ryan Day's. And, you know, with it being loaded, I think if their only losses to Michigan, it's just stupid. But it happened to John Cooper. It's happened before. This Preston here. John Cooper could
pretty much happened to Ryan Day. I mean, other than the Oregon loss, these last 3 years, their only bad loss is Michigan.
Yeah, but I'm saying Cooper got fired. Day hasn't been fired yet, but, you know, people are starting to talk.
Cooper was there for 11 years off the top of my head. It was quite a bit. Like, I don't think in this day and age, Ryan Day gets as long as a leash as Cooper, correct?
No.
Okay.
No.
Let me just say this. Okay. 10-1. Going into the Michigan game, he loses. I don't think he survives.
I could see him getting fired, but that seems a little silly too.
But this is the Ohio State. You can't go 0-4. And then I will say this. They won't fire him after the Michigan game because probably a 10-2 Ohio State team gets in the college football playoff. Right. Then you have to make a run.
So what if he makes it the championship game?
Then I think he saves his job. How about this? He goes 11-1 regular season, beats Michigan. Definitely safe there, right? Wins the Big Ten championship, gets beat right away. First game in the college football playoff. Not getting rid of him there.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Beat Michigan, win one game in the college football playoff. Safe as sound. Safe as can be for Ryan Day.
Absolutely.
So it's like that combo in there. And it's crazy. His win-loss record is absurd. He is in the top five of all of these coaching rankings, and he deserves to be. This is what you agree to when you take over in Columbus. It's just what it is. So he knows that better than anybody. From our guy, Mazda Sabari, Maryland's quarterback situation. The spring game raised more questions than answers. I watched the spring game. Can I start out? Can I take the lead on this? And you can give me your thoughts on this. Yeah. So he's talking about the three quarterbacks not looking great. Billy Edwards Jr., MJ Morris. MJ Morris came around a little bit in the game, and Cam Edge. Here's what I think. I think Locks's passing attack is such a timing thing. It takes time to get it down. When you have young guys with a young-ish, not as much of an established receiving core as we've maybe seen from Locks, it doesn't pop in the spring. So Maryland fans, don't worry. We've seen Locks do this 1,000 times. He'll get that passing attack going. With that being said, I think this might actually be more of a running and defensive led team next year. So yeah, a little bit different flavor, but I wouldn't be freaking out too much that the quarterbacks didn't look up to snuff in the spring game.
My advice, maybe find God. As an Illini fan, I really have no answers. Good luck.
All right. From KP at, not going to read this off, but we knew this guy formerly as SRS, Standing Room Spartans. Welcome back into the fold, SRS. Even though under 50% of our scholarship players have entered the portal, why should, or over 50% of their, have over 50% of their scholarship players entered? That's got to be kind of a joke, right?
I don't think that's exactly right.
Even if it flirts with 50%, it is the point.
Wasn't it like 30 players? I thought it was about 30 players.
Yeah, so it's under. I mean, it'd be closer, like, at worst, a third of the scholarship players have entered the transfer, right? Okay. A lot of players have entered the transfer portal. Why should MSU fans remain hopeful that Jonathan Smith can put together a bowl season in year one?
So Jonathan Smith is a good coach, but he's not a deity, nor is he a demigod. And nobody's anointing him that either.
No.
But he's just a really good coach. He's not our new demigod.
But people like him.
Yeah, they do.
He ranks high.
And they have brought in one of the better transfer classes, from what I can tell. So we saw this with Tuck. Crazier things have happened. That's why we watched the game. So that's all I can say is just have hope and good things can happen.
I would say I'm not a Michigan State fan, and it's funny because you briefly tried to talk for a fan base, and you know the only thing you're doing is pissing them off. But I'm going to try anyway, especially with Michigan State fans who have definitely kind of hated us over the times, over the last 3 or 4 years. But I'll say this.
Yes.
If I could give some advice that would just 10% of it get through, go into this season with very manageable expectations. If he exceeds them, be very happy about that. However, if he doesn't exceed those expectations, don't fret, because Jonathan Smith has turned things around. He has the ability to do it again. You just got to give it some time, Sparty fans.
Yeah.
I think it'll be okay.
It took some time at Oregon State. It was like, you know, baby steps.
But then he got there. So I think he can do it again. Yeah. There is an adult in the room where Mel Tucker.
but there was not adultery in the room.
Yes. We have given up adultery for an adult. That's fantastic. And which Smarty fans should be happy about. I hope they're laughing here. All right. This is the newbie section. We got, oh, wait. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. We got one more from Standing Room Spartans. It's a good question. Sorry. And then we'll move on to the newbie section. Optimal food, drink, spread for a college football Saturday. And you're going to like this part. On the couch. Food, drink, spread, college football Saturday from your couch. What's the optimal spread? Me?
Yeah. Go.
I want easy snack. I just want to
like
I
a
might,
pretzel?
Pretzel. Come on. That's such a good answer. Nope, pretzels. No. No, I don't. Okay. Pretzels? No. Pretzels would be like
pretzels.
Yeah, of course you like pretzels. You like, what's your favorite cereal? What was that again?
Quaker 100% oats with dates.
There's more juice in that box than there is in any pretzel that's ever been made. Well, not the fresh bready pretzels, but that's not what you're talking. No, I want like chips and salsa. I want like a cheesy dip.
Not for your couch. I'm disagreeing on the couch because there's too much potential for drippage. You want to me.
Is it the first time eating a dip in your life?
For me, a dip is better at a table.
Huh?
I want to be at a table for a dip.
Well, okay, I do. I have you've been to the downstairs athletic club. I got that table, you know, that sits in the middle of both the couch and love seat. First of all, I'm not laying down on the couch during college football Saturday. I'm sitting up. I'm anxious. I'm watching Iowa. I've got 75 bets going on. So I'm not laying down. I'm always in a sitting position. So
okay,
you just literally go from a 90 degree angle to a, 60 degree angle to dip a chip in a nice, yummy dip, that's no problem for me. That's what I want. And then obviously Amador bourbon, you know, with a bottomless barrel next to me.
Yeah. So if we don't have to account for the recovery period, I'm definitely going with Amador, just nothing but Amador to drink.
Okay.
But now that I've moved back to the Chicago area, I'm going with a traditional Chicago tavern style pizza.
Pizza's
thin
fine.
Crust, square cut, small pieces with Italian sausage. You got to have the Italian sausage with a lot of basil in it. And then throw one or two veggies on there too.
I want dips all day, easy to eat. And then at the end of the day, pizza or wings. You can get me with either one of those.
Okay. All right.
Newbies section. First one up from my guy, Eric Townsley at Eric Townsley. Which new pack slash big, right? Which new pack slash big team, UCLA or Washington, will have a better year?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Washington. I don't care how much they lost. They're going to have a good roster behind those guys that lost. They've also had a really good offseason in the transfer portal. And part of the reason is just that based on recent success, but also I don't even know if UCLA wants to play football anymore.
Yes. Unfortunately, from our guy Mark, I'm not sure either. I'm not sure how much UCLA – they're just along for the ride in the Big Ten right now until I see different. For Mark's sake, I hope I'm wrong. But having a absolute newbie as a coach in Deshaun Foster going into the Big Ten, yikes, man, that is tough.
And,
we're on the other side. Jed Fish, he knows what he's doing. Adult in the room to continue with the theme. So, yeah, Washington. But Eric's question is correct. Like, those are the two teams that most people are looking at for the newbies that would struggle the most, but I would think Washington would struggle quite a bit less. Fair enough?
Fair.
Okay.
Yep.
From our guy Kingfisher, this was his second question. Why are the Pac-4 not just going to come in and run the league like many think? I don't know if many think that UCLA or Washington are going to come in and run the league. So I would siphon that question down to Oregon. Oregon fans, bombastic. They are uber confident to come in. Then USC. Okay, so let's just get to those two. So if the question is, why won't they come in and run the league? If I can venture out the answer first. It's an old-fashioned answer. I just happen to believe it's true. If you look at the teams that have given USC and kind of Oregon issues over the years, Utah, right? Teams that kind of hit you in the mouth. Stanford, when they did that, when they had that style.
Yeah, true. That's a good point.
Aren't there more in the league now that they have to go through? And just combining that with long trips in weather.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not like, and then another thing I would add on, there's not a real good track record that we've seen recently of these new teams completely changing geography and conferences and coming in. It doesn't typically work well. So like, I would use history as another example. Now, Oregon, I got my eyes on you, okay? Like, believe them to be good, but those are all of the reasons mix it in a blender. That's why I don't think they'll come in and quote-unquote run shop like Kingfisher said.
No, I don't think they will either. In fact, I think this is the most interesting aspect about these new teams is the, I'm going to call it the brawn versus brains, because the brains are just scheming up. I'm going to run people all over the field and throw all over you and try to win that way versus Braun just punch in the mouth. And traditionally, Braun does win there. But I don't know. What if it doesn't? What if Oregon has enough talent? What if it's just schemes that the Big Ten is not used to seeing? What if Lincoln Riley goes back to being the quarterback whisperer and you know, just plugging anybody in and it's a miracle? I cannot wait to see how that plays out.
It is going to be interesting. It is going to be interesting. And I kind of stepped on Jeffrey Wright's question. I do want to ask it though. G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y is how he spells it. Here's my question, JTG. When Nebraska joined the Big, I underestimated how physical this league is. It is a black and blue fist fight every week. Do you envision the four new teams struggling with that physicality? Personally, I do. Talent-wise, Oregon especially can compete with the best. However, are they ready for the week-to-week grind? Thanks, man. Love the pod. Jeffrey sees what we just discussed. I wanted to bring Jeffrey's question in and not, you know, not read it. We're not the only ones that see it. We are not saying, I am not saying that both USC and Oregon and Washington will never figure it out, that they're going to just get destroyed, that they're going to be the a bloody pulp version of themselves by the end of the year. It's not going to be that much of a whooping. I just think it'll be a little harder than their players, coaches, and some of their fans believe it will be. My thing would be Oregon. Okay. You know what? I'm going to switch that up. USC. There's some USC accounts though that like their bombastic ways of communicating on Twitter, wearing thin, they are only respecting like the Ohio States and Michigans and maybe Penn States of the Big Ten. My question for USC is going to be, after they play an Ohio State or Michigan, turning around and going to the road to play a Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, methinks it'll be a little bit tougher than what they think it will be.
You know what I'm looking forward to? When USC is ranked in the top five and they take a trip to Evanston and the grass is 7 inches tall and the score is 10-7 at halftime when they're averaging 52 points a game and the Twitter just blowing up. Nuts.
What is going on? Why are we not? Yes. Things like that. I can't wait to see it because I'll be shocked if it doesn't happen. I just think it'll happen because that's how it goes. From our guy Husker Ironcat at Husker Ball 4. Assuming this is what the big conference looks like, Jace. Yeah. Assuming this is what the big conference looks like for the next 5 years. Can we get the next 5 years of the conference just looking like this? Okay, now I'll get to the question. How do you see each of the four newcomers performing in that time? I don't think UCLA will do well. I think they're going to struggle mightily. I believe Washington will do what Washington does, which is take big steps up and then crash down. And then take a big step up and crash down. Oregon, I believe, will go 10-2, 11-1 every year, but have a hard time getting over the top because that has been Oregon's DNA. USC, also very similar. If I had to guess, the first of the four to win a Big Ten championship would be USC.
Okay. I was probably going to go Oregon first to win. I was going to say, I don't have a whole lot to add, but I was going to say Oregon and USC potential to win a title in that 5 year span. Probably just one, maybe two though. I could see two happening, but if I had to guess, just one of those teams wins a title in that 5 year period. And then just throwing UCLA in there, I think they could be the next team to be Chicago'd out of the Big Ten.
Oh, wow. You went scorched earth on UCLA.
Well, it's a little tongue in cheek, but I could see them just saying, you know what? We really don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. I hope that's not the case. I'm joking. Yeah, I know. I know.
To be honest, I'm joking,
I know. Yeah, I know.
Just goes back to my point of I used to think that nobody cared less about football in the world than the administration at the University of Illinois. I was wrong about that.
UCLA
has beaten them. Yes.
The beatings will continue until morale improves. All right. This is from not so Liam King. Which of the games involving new Big Ten schools do you think could most easily develop into an interesting rivalry? So obviously we're not talking about what existing rivalries are already there. We're talking about a new funky one. I got one for you. How about Nebraska and USC?
Hmm.
What do you think of that?
It's not grabbing me.
Not grabbing you? Okay.
No.
You got a different one for me?
To be honest, I really don't.
Yeah.
I think this is a great question, but this is one of the reasons why I'm just not really excited about this. I'm sorry, everyone. I don't see, other than USC with Ohio State or with Michigan, because they've played historically so many times in the Rose Bowl, I could see that kind of developing into something. I got to think Oregon's going to get rivalry-ish with somebody. I'm not sure who that would be, though. I think it's just going to have to play out over time. If they have some knockdown dragouts against Penn State, for instance, maybe right. Penn State, or it could be like an Iowa or something like that. Maybe it's, you know, a team like Iowa, Wisconsin that they should be able to beat, but they can never seem to get past them. So it develops into a rivalry in that sense. But I just, nothing really jumps out at me as too exciting. No.
And, you know, Oregon's biggest rivalry is going to remain Washington. USC's is going to be UCLA, yeah. Michigan, Ohio State. Obviously, I could go on looking. I think most of the people hear this question, they look at it from the point of view of their own fandom. I'm rivalried out, man. I'm an Iowa fan. We got rivalries against Iowa State, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Minnesota. They're all trophies. I can't take on another rival. I don't want another one. And Penn State is another rival that people think for Iowa. Speaking of Penn State, they're unrivaled, as the joke goes. Maybe they're somebody that jumps up and has some sort of, you know, nearly East Coast, West Coast rivalry. I don't know. I think Oregon, Ohio State is one that people,
yeah,
like going sure. into this year, the newly hot contested old guard versus the newbies, the one that people are going to look at the most obviously is Ohio State, Oregon. But does that play out over the years? That's the stuff that you don't know. I'm not saying I'm unexcited. I'm saying I'm going to have to see it for me to like really start grasping it and like getting fired up for Washington, Wisconsin, you know, the W's. I don't know. Like, yeah. I'm going to need to see that organically happen. And that's just going to take some time. I got an 8-year-old. He's going to be in post-college for real. That's what we're looking at here. 10, 15 years until we feel like we can have these rivalries. And that's too far out for me to predict.
Yeah.
And then last one from our guy, MJ Perk. He had one of the first questions. Sarcastic. We'll give him the last question on the podcast. Which new incoming big team and fan base do you like the most? And which do you like the least? Like the most, pretty easy for me. Washington fans seem to be the most normal. It's the best way I could put it. And I would say, as a side note, I am probably the most interested to someday making a game out in Washington so I can go sailgating. That for sounds sure. like a little heaven on earth. Is that your most liked fan base so far? The newbies?
Concur with Washington, yes. And okay. I'll add that outside of Mark Shipper, haven't seen any UCLA fans.
Still waiting to meet my first UCLA fan on Twitter. Yep. It's like spotting a Yeti at this point. So they're kind of off the table right there. So that basically leaves two fan bases for the most hated, USC and Oregon. I'll say this. I went into this experiment assuming USC would be my most hated of the newbie fan base. But by gosh, Oregon is making a strong run at the most bombastic new fan base on Twitter. They're kind of amazing me from what I've seen so far.
I did not underestimate Oregon. I knew that's what would happen. They have not disappointed me. I can't choose right now, but if I'm forced to choose, I'm going with Oregon as my most hated.
You are going with Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay.
New money.
All right. I'll say this, Southern California lifestyle doesn't exactly fit in with me growing up on a farm in Iowa. When I bumped into USC fans down in the Orange Bowl, not great, man. Not great. Did not like, I think I'm going to put them on the perch right now, but boy, Oregon is they're hot on their tail. I will tell you that much right now. So you could maybe give me another 3 weeks and I could flip on that, but there it is. There it is. That was an extensive mailbag right there. That was a lot of questions that we went through, but that was fun.
It's a big sack.
It was a big sack. You got anything else you want to add, big man?
Well, the Illini just went up 8-2 on Purdue in game two after winning game one. If they seal this one up, it's at least a share of the Big Ten championship. This is baseball. Top of the seventh inning, grand salami by the Illini, 8-2.
Spring and summer is when Illinois. Well, that's not true. Well, yeah, it is. Spring and summer. That's when Illinois sports catch fire. Illinois basketball in the spring, right? Golf. Is it golf?
Spring sport? Spring golf, sport? Yeah. They were dominant in the regional, by the way, even though they didn't win the Big Ten.
And then baseball, been good. Maybe you can take some of that spring and summer heat, push it into the fall, man.
Yep.
I am Jeffrey the Greek.
I am Big Kurt.
This has been the Eyes on Big Podcast. We will talk to you soon.